Chapter 30. 1 July 1937. Hannah fought off sleep. She could hear the phone ringing in the distance. Half comatose, she peered at the still figure beside her. Matt? She knew he was awake, but he didn't answer. The bedside clock told her it was 3:30. Fear tightened in her throat. Who could be ringing at this hour? She slid out of bed and ran down to the hall to answer it. Matt kept saying they must put a phone upstairs, but she hadn't got round to it. Hello? All her worries about Lizzie came back. She was afraid something terrible must have happened to her. She caught only one word. Police. They were asking for Matt. Something about an accident and a break-in at Evans's. Matt was behind her by then. She handed him the phone. He'd taken time to put on dressing gown and slippers. Lizzie had been on her mind since she'd gone so suddenly, but this didn't seem to involve her. "He's dead." Matt's voice was sharp, making her stomach muscles contract again. "Yes, they sound like our wage packets. They were locked in the safe in my office at 5:30 yesterday afternoon. No sign of break-in? I'll come straight away. About half an hour. I'll have to dress." "What's happened?" Matt's face was stiff with outrage. "Phone Greg. Tell him to meet me at Evans's. I want him there right away." "But what's happened?" He was halfway up the stairs. "As if we haven't enough trouble without this." Matt hadn't changed. His own worries always occupied him too much to think of resolving those of others. Hannah asked the operator for Greg's number. She could hear it ringing on and on. "I'm trying to connect you," the operator assured her at two-minute intervals. The parquet floor was cold to her bare feet. She stood on one, lifted the other behind her knee. The operator's voice came again. "I'm afraid there's no reply." "There is someone there, probably asleep. Keep trying, please. It's urgent." At last the ringing stopped. A sleepy voice answered. It was Greg's housekeeper. "Wake Mr. Mortimer up," said Hannah. "I have to speak to him." Matt was clattering downstairs, fully dressed, as Greg came on the line. He snatched the phone from her. "Someone's stolen the wages, but he crashed the getaway car and killed himself. No identification on him, and it looks like a stolen car. Get yourself down there." Matt was wide awake now. "You might as well go back to bed, Hannah." He was struggling with the bolts on the front door. "Don't put these on again, or I won't be able to get back in."
"Was it an employee?"
He shrugged. "Could be. The safe is locked. If our money is gone, he must have used a key." Hannah went slowly upstairs, filled with dread that the thief might turn out to be Maisie O'Malley's son, the lad with the strange eyes. The bed was warm, but sleep wouldn't come. She was afraid Lizzie might be involved after all. She didn't understand why she'd gone. She'd been so certain Lizzie was happy here at Oak Ridge. Happy with Nick, too. The whole office was agog with the news that the wages had been stolen. Instead of getting on with their work, clerks stood about in groups, wondering if they'd be paid today. Nick slumped at his desk, his letter of resignation sealed in its envelope in front of him. He was slow to start work, too. He couldn't get Lizzie out of his mind. She'd been gone for 10 days, and he hadn't been able to fill the great gaping hole in his life. He'd read and reread her letter, and it didn't make sense. He loved Lizzie, and he'd been so certain she'd loved him. She'd gone back to Joey, and that hurt like hell. He could think of no good reason why she should change her mind. He'd never felt more lonely. He knew he had to face the fact she'd gone for good, and he'd have to find consolation elsewhere. He couldn't keep his eyes away from Joey's desk, 2 rows in front. Cleared and polished, it had not been used over the last week because he was in Blackpool on holiday. He told everybody he was going, and there was a postcard from him pinned to the notice board. Nick had taken it down to read, but it hadn't mentioned Lizzie. Presumably she was with Joey, but he hated to think of their being together. He'd written to Capital Farms, and he'd been for an interview. They'd offered him the under-manager's job, and he'd accepted it. There was now no reason to stay with Evans's. He'd promised his parents to give it a reasonable trial, and 3 years more than fulfilled that. If nothing else, he could now do the job he wanted.
but really what he wanted was for Lizzie to come back and tell him she'd made a mistake, that it was him she loved.
Nick looked round the hall. The loss of the wages was causing general unrest. It was almost 10 o'clock, and nobody was settling down to work, but that was no reason why his notice shouldn't go in. Nick got to his feet to go up to Greg's office. He'd leave it with Miss Peacock. He was getting to his feet when Greg Mortimer slammed through the door behind him. They almost collided. Greg was moving faster than Nick had ever seen him move before, and didn't even acknowledge his presence. The theft was having an effect throughout the company. Nick saw him say something to Miss Peacock before whisking into Matt's office. For once, Miss Peacock did not blend into her surroundings. Her glasses had been discarded, and her cheeks were scarlet.
"It was Joey O'Malley!"
There was an hysterical note in her whisper. She looked 10 years younger.
"What was?"
Nick slid his letter into her tray.
"It was him they found dead in the car with the wage packets burst all over him."
Nick felt sick with horror. Hadn't he known Joey was up to something all along?
"Mr. Mortimer just said so. He was asked to go down to identify the wage packets. They showed him the body, too. Definitely Joey O'Malley."
Nick felt worse. Surely Lizzie couldn't be involved. Greg hadn't closed the door, and Matt's harassed voice carried clearly.
"Did you ask when we could have our money back?"
"They said they'd release the evidence as soon as they could."
"What evidence?"
Matt sounded angry now.
"They can't bring a case. The man's already dead. Just as well he killed himself."
"At least we can all be sure we'll be paid,"
Layla Peacock said, sotto voce.
"Bloody chaos,"
Greg fumed.
"Do we withdraw more cash, or do we wait to get the other back?" "Tell everybody they'll have to wait,"
Matt said crossly.
"We'll pay when we can. The money will come back. Cost us more if we have to start again from scratch."
"This Joey O'Malley, he's not—"
"Somebody Hannah knows. She asked me to take him on in the first place. Insisted. And all this time he's been robbing us blind."
"Good God! But he wasn't here, you say?"
"On holiday in Blackpool. The police found ticket stubs in his pocket for the entrance to Blackpool Tower. Just building up an alibi, they thought."
"Good job he killed himself, then. Serve him right.
Send a memo to all departments about pay."
Nick could hear them coming out. They paused in the doorway.
"Hannah asked you to employ this one, too."
Greg's face showed displeasure as he nodded in Nick's direction.
"Nick Bender from Yarrow."
Matt frowned at him with equal resentment.
"Yes, I remember."
It didn't seem the most auspicious moment for Nick to tell them he'd handed in his notice, but he did. He hadn't expected to be persuaded to stay, but he sensed relief that he was going.
"I'm sorry," he said stiffly. "I've put you to a lot of trouble to teach me the trade."
At least he'd never stolen anything from them.
"You don't need to work out a month's notice if you'd rather not,"
Greg said with equal stiffness.
"Thank you," Nick said. "Then I'd like to leave now. I'll just collect a few personal belongings from my desk and say goodbye."
Matthew Mortimer actually smiled at that and shook his hand. He seemed not in the least put out at Nick's defection. But Nick was more concerned about Lizzie. Whichever way he looked at it, she would need him now. He wondered how much Hannah knew. Before leaving the office, he picked up the phone and asked to be connected with her. He wanted her to know it had been Joey O'Malley who had stolen the wages.
"I think Lizzie must still be up in Blackpool."
"Surely she wouldn't have anything to do with this."
Hannah sounded distraught.
"What has happened to her?"
"Perhaps she doesn't know what's happened to Joey. She could still be there waiting."
"If only we knew where she was,"
Hannah worried.
"I do know," Nick said. "At least I know where Joey was staying in Blackpool. The address is on our notice board. The boarding house belongs to a relative of our Miss Peacock. Joey told everybody he was going there."
"Shall we go up there and see if we can find her?"
Hannah's voice lifted nervously at her own suggestion.
"Will you come with me? If Joey's dead, she'll have nowhere else to go. This is her home."
"Yes, yes."
"We'll take my car. I'll pick you up at the front door, say in half an hour."
Nick studied the notice board. There was even a map with instructions of how to find the boarding house. Hannah thought Nick looked wretched as he sat hunched in the seat beside her, saying little.
She felt wretched herself. "I can't see why Lizzie should go off with Joey like that." Nick was shaking his head. They'd been through all this countless times already. He looked very young and defenseless. The journey was longer than she'd anticipated.
"Are you getting tired, Hannah? Shall I drive for a bit?"
She was glad to let him.
"A nice car to drive."
He smiled at her.
"Much better than my old Chummy."
He was driving faster. She wanted to get there and get it over. The sight of the sea and the promenade thronged with holidaymakers came at last. Nick turned the car down a side street.
"There it is, the Bellevue, on your left."
Nick parked.
"Let's hope we're lucky after coming all this way."
He was out of the car before she was and up the steps of the Bellevue. The front door stood open. The inner lobby door, with its stained glass and a notice about not bringing sand inside, was closed. Hannah rang the bell and went straight in. The woman coming towards them might have been Greg's secretary, except that her hair was lighter and brighter, and she wore a brilliantly coloured floral blouse over a royal blue skirt. "Miss Peacock?" she asked.
"We have no vacancies at the moment, I'm afraid."
Hannah saw Nick smile.
"We were wondering if you could help us. We've come to see somebody we believe is staying here. The name's O'Malley."
"Yes, that's right. Mr. and Mrs. O'Malley."
Hannah gulped at that, but Nick didn't seem to turn a hair. It must upset him, though. What was Lizzie thinking of, for goodness sake?
"Are they in?"
"Funny you should come today. I've been a bit worried about them, actually."
She pushed her rose-tinted spectacle frames further up her nose.
"About Mr. O'Malley?"
"Yes. He didn't sleep in his bed last night, nor has he been in to any meals since. It's very strange, but he seems to have disappeared. All his things are still here, though."
"What about Mrs. O'Malley?"
It took an effort to say that.
"I'm worried about her, too. She was supposed to be coming out of hospital today, but there's been no sign of her either."
"She's in hospital? What happened?"
She heard the fear in Nick's voice. It showed on his face, too.
"Very unfortunate. Especially to happen while she's on holiday, poor girl. She lost her baby, her miscarriage."
Hannah found herself holding onto a coat hanging on the hall stand. She went cold with shock. At last the conundrum fell into place.
Poor Lizzie, a baby.
But it should happen to her too. She wanted to cry for Lizzie. She knew the emotional turmoil she'd gone through. She would so willingly have helped her. She'd been through it all herself. She'd helped Dorothy, but Lizzie had opted to manage on her own. No, not her own. She'd gone back to Joey. It was the only possible reason that made sense. Nick was pushing his heavy brown hair back from his forehead and staring blankly in front of him.
"She was supposed to be coming out today, you said?"
Hannah recovered first.
"Yes. Mr. O'Malley was saying last night that he was going to collect her this morning. There's even a small case packed in their room."
"Nick," Hannah had to shake his arm, "take the case and go to the hospital. See if Lizzie's still there." Miss Peacock was aggressive.
"You can't take their things away, not without paying their bill."
"I'll pay it if you make it out," Hannah said quietly. "Show us to their room. I'm afraid Joey O'Malley won't be coming back. He was killed in an accident last night." As she climbed the stairs, Hannah felt as if she'd been kicked. She felt sick. Poor Lizzie. If she was pregnant, that explained everything. Stiff with apprehension, Lizzie felt she'd been standing at the hospital window for hours. The car park was below her. She'd expected to see Joey's Austin 7 turn into it an hour or more ago. She'd watched every bus halt at the gates in case he had decided not to bring the car. He was so secretive about everything. Though buses disgorged passengers constantly, none proved to be Joey. The miscarriage had shown her what a mess she'd made for herself. She'd wanted to marry Nick, and here she was married to Joey. Everything she'd done for the last 2 weeks had been for the sake of the baby. Losing it now was another disaster. On top of that, she'd felt a vague unease since the hospital routine had woken her at 5:30 this morning. She'd tried to dismiss it from her mind, but it wouldn't go. Joey had promised not to go back to Evans's to steal the wages, but she'd been afraid, so afraid that he would. Joey's promises were not to be trusted. The doctors had come on a formal ward round at 10 and pronounced her sufficiently recovered to be discharged. It was dinner time. The heated trolley was being pushed into the ward. Lizzie had hoped to be back at the boarding house by now. "Has my husband phoned yet?" she asked Sister, who was dishing up. "Not yet. You'll be able to have your dinner before you go." Lizzie looked at the boiled fish with distaste. She wasn't hungry. She was getting the jitters. How long would they keep her if Joey didn't come? She had no clothes with her, only the nightdress and dressing-gown she stood up in. The meal was cleared away. Lizzie hovered at the window again and turned constantly to watch the hands of the clock. 2.5 hours overdue. This wasn't like Joey. She remembered the time he'd been late coming to the Lyceum to pick her up. Nothing drastic had gone wrong that night. Perhaps she was imagining a disaster now. But Joey knew how anxious she'd be. He had nothing else to do but come here. Gnawing doubt was growing into a certainty that something dreadful had happened to him. She had to do something. She went to Sister's office. "Can I make a phone call?" She'd ring the boarding house and ask for Joey. If he'd had his breakfast there, she'd know he was all right. "Perhaps you'd better find out what's keeping your husband. There's a public phone in the entrance hall. I'll get somebody to go down with you, show you the way." Lizzie felt she was going to the scaffold as she followed the probationer downstairs. She felt physically sick as she inserted her coins and waited to be connected. She recognized Miss Peacock's effusive tones when she answered. "It's Lizzie O'Malley," she said. "Is my husband there? He promised to come and fetch me from hospital, and he hasn't come." There was a few seconds' silence. She knew immediately something was wrong. Miss Peacock's voice, when it came again, was guarded, as though unwilling to speak to her. "We haven't seen him here since last night." Lizzie was gasping for air, her worst fears realized. Joey had been caught. "Do you know where he is?" She rested her head against the glass, avoided the eye of the probationer standing a few feet away. The handset was still at her ear. "Two people came here asking for you, a man and a woman. The man is on his way to pick you up now." That sent shock waves through her. She straightened up. The police must be looking for her, too. She had known what Joey intended. Did that make her an accomplice? Miss Peacock's voice came again. "Do you want to speak to—" "Thank you," she said hurriedly and slammed the phone back on its hook. The blood was pounding in her head. What was she to do now? She was miles from anyone she knew. She'd never felt so alone. She was distraught. She heard the tap on the glass and assumed it was the nurse. She didn't even look up. Instead, her nerveless fingers were gathering up the extra pennies she'd had ready. Somebody pulled the door open, and arms folded round her. "Lizzie," he said. "Oh, Lizzie, thank goodness I found you." She'd been thinking of Nick, of how much she needed him, of how much she loved him, and at first she wasn't sure he was here in the flesh. She clung to him, finding comfort in the familiar rough Harris tweed of his jacket. Nick had come from nowhere when she needed him most. "I've come to take you home," he said softly against her hair. "I've brought your clothes. Get dressed, Lizzie." She straightened up, rigid with fear.
"Joey? What's happened to Joey? Why hasn't he come?"
"We can't talk here. There's nowhere to sit." Nick's eyes were overflowing with sympathy. She knew something terrible had happened. She looked round the stone-floored hospital entrance and shivered.
"Joey's been caught, hasn't he? I've got to know."
"Not caught," he said gently. "Worse than that."
"What could be worse? Not—"
"Come back to the ward." Her legs felt as though they were buckling under her.
"I've got to know."
But she knew already. She'd had this terrible feeling of foreboding all day. With Nick's arm round her waist, she was stumbling upstairs in the wake of the nurse. She could feel horror washing over her in waves. At the ward door, she saw Nick take the nurse aside and tell her something. She watched the girl draw screens round her bed. Nick put the case he'd brought on her locker. Lizzie knew her fingers were shaking as she opened it. The red dress she'd asked Joey to bring was neatly folded on top of her underclothes. It brought stinging tears to her eyes.
Lizzie.
Nick sat on the bed and pulled her to sit beside him. He put his arm round her shoulders and drew her closer.
He's dead, isn't he?
She whispered. Deep in her bones she was as certain as if Nick had told her already.
I'm afraid he's been killed, Lizzie.
His voice was soft, hardly more than a murmur. She couldn't imagine the world without Joey. He'd been so important in her life.
How?
An accident in his car, last night, at New Ferry Toll Bar. His voice went on unsteadily, telling her how Joey's car had smashed through the plate glass window of Gallagher's cake shop. Lizzie felt light-headed. Nothing seemed real.
I used to buy blackcurrant tarts there. They cost 3 halfpence each, so we didn't have them often. Joey loved them.
She was weeping against Nick's shirt.
What was he doing in New Ferry?
On his way back to you, I think. Nobody really knows how or why it happened.
She could hold back the torrent no longer. Great sobs were racking her. Nick held her tight. His voice shook as he told her about the wage packets that had been found in the car with Joey, and about what had been happening at Evans's.
I told him that car rolled on corners. That model was known for it. If only he'd listened.
She could see Nick was shaken to the core, too.
My poor Joey.
On the front step of the Bellevue, Lizzie paused.
Why are we coming back here?
Hannah came with me. She's packing your things.
Nick hooked her arm through his in a comforting gesture. Her eyes felt hot and tight, but there were icicles in her stomach. She didn't feel ready to face Hannah, not when she'd walked out of her house so suddenly without explanation. But Hannah met her at the door to the sitting room with outstretched arms. It was empty of holidaymakers at this hour.
Lizzie, love, you should have told me. You should have let me help you. We could have worked something out.
Lizzie hugged her, then searched her face. She saw affection and understanding in her dark eyes, not the condemnation she'd expected.
You're not the only one this has happened to.
I know. It happened to my mother, too.
Lizzie choked.
That was the problem, wasn't it?
Hannah asked. You understood how the baby would feel as she grew up?
She nodded. I had to do it. Marrying Joey was the only way. I had to do the best for my baby.
It wasn't the best way for you, Lizzie, Hannah said softly.
You should have thought of your own needs, too. There's never one simple answer. The room was overfilled with chairs. Lizzie found herself on one with a cup of tea in her hand.
I know, because it happened to me, too, Hannah was telling her. My daughter was adopted, but I don't know whether I made the best choice for her. I hope I did, and that she is happy. I know for me it was the most traumatic experience of my life. I know what you went through.
You must try to put it behind you now, Lizzie, Nick said quietly.
Hannah drove home. Lizzie sat in the back with Nick. His arm was round her shoulders, pulling her against the warmth of his body. The terrible agitation had left her. She still felt weak, but she was better. She hadn't been able to stop Joey. He'd wanted to do things his way. He hadn't listened to her, and now it was too late. Softly, Nick began telling her that he was definitely going to work for Capital Farms now. She knew it was the right thing for him. The hum of the engine was soporific. She dozed on and off. They were halfway home when Nick whispered,
"Both of you would have been better off with me."
It was Joey's baby.
That wouldn't have mattered to me.
His voice was tender. I'd have looked after you both. I love you, Lizzie. Nothing else matters.
What a mess I made of everything.
When you can put it behind you, forget what's happened. I want you to marry me. It's what we planned, isn't it?
He took the little leather box she recognized from his pocket, opened it, and took out the 3-stone diamond engagement ring. He was lifting her left hand. His fingers encountered Joey's wedding band on her third finger.
"Joey and I were married on Saturday," she choked.
She saw the hurt in his eyes. His fingers closed round her wedding ring. She thought he was about to slide it from her finger. Instead, he pushed it down, twisted it round twice.
"You've gone through so much, Lizzie. Losing the baby and now losing Joey. And it's all been so sudden. Wear Joey's ring, for as long as you want to."
Lizzie swallowed hard. Nick was so kind and thoughtful. She offered her left hand to him again.
"I'm not sure Joey was right for me, not the right husband. I've known him too long and too well. I'd rather it went now."
She felt the band of gold slipping away. Nick put it in his pocket.
"We've both known him a long time. He's behind us now."
Lizzie heard him snap the leather box shut, felt it being pressed into her hand.
"Keep this until you're ready to wear it."
She nodded, and a smile trembled on her lips. She was quite certain Nick was right for her. It might take her a little time to get over what had happened, but one day she would. This concludes Nobody's Child by Anne Baker. Narrated by Anne Flosnick. Copyright 1994 by Anne Baker. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Anne Baker, care of Dolly Anderson Literary TV and Film Agency, and was produced in the year 2019 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright there too. Please visit tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.